The gun buyback program is going to have zero impact on gun crime.
I don't know where to begin because of all the misrepresentations in that intervention.
He pretty much sold Canadians on this idea that he was going to be different than Trudeau. Well, at least on the debt, the truth is that he is different than Trudeau. He's planning to borrow billions of dollars more than Trudeau. Carney is barreling ahead with his gun ban and confiscation scheme. This is a huge taxpayer boondoggle. It targets law-abiding Canadians' private property, and it won't make Canada safe. We've got the man who represents the men and women in blue in Canada's largest city coming on the show to break it all down. So stay tuned for my interview with Clayton Campbell, the president of the Toronto Police Association. We've also got Chris Sims coming back on the show. It's Clips with Chris to break down all the taxpayer news that you don't want to miss. But first, a Liberal minister accidentally tells the truth. Oopsies. Now, thanks to Tracy Wilson with the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights, Canadians can listen to the audio from Minister of Public Safety who was speaking about the gun confiscation scheme. So listen to what the minister says he would do if he could start all over again. Check out this clip.
Listen, if I told you, if I were to redo this fund, like from like scratch, that right? I would have a very different interest rates. What do you think you should implement if you could start scratch?
What would be the first thing we would do?
What I would do is like, I mean, it's going to happen. Fraser's already working on, right? So I think on firearms possession, without a license, illegal firearms that we caught in public. I mean, if anyone caught with it or caught close to it, should face jail time. White.
Okay, so the minister inherits a complete mess from Trudeau and, you know, essentially says that if he could start all over again, he would focus on criminals. All right, I want to play another clip here for you where the minister admits that some police forces are not going to have the resources to actually confiscate law-abiding Canadians' property. So let's give a listen to this next clip here.
Let's be frank. I don't know here. I just don't think municipal police services have the resources to do this. Well, frankly, I think you're right.
I'll be a Dillington Honours and Deputy.
So the minister is essentially just saying, admitting with anyone with half an ounce of common sense already knows, right? If you want to make Canada safe, go after criminals, not law-abiding Canadian citizens. So I also want to play another clip here, this one from the House of Commons, and it's Conservative Party leader Pierre Poilievre with some direct questions to Prime Minister Mark Carney on the gun confiscation scheme. So give it a listen, give it a watch. Here's the clip.
But his own Minister of Public Safety says this government is doing it wrong. He was caught on tape saying the program won't work, and yet they are going to rip $750 million away from our border and police services to harass duck hunters and farmers by banning the firearms they use. This approach has led to a 130% increase in gun crime under the Liberals' watch. The police say they won't implement it. The minister says it's a bad idea, but they're only doing it for political reasons. Why is the Prime Minister putting lives at risk for politics?
Here. The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I don't even know where to begin with that.
That's right.
First off,
well, I have an idea of where to begin. Let's begin with the absolutely huge costs to taxpayers. Look, every time that we hear about the cost of the gun ban and confiscation scheme, it gets bigger, right? When the Liberals first announced the confiscation scheme, they said it would cost about $200 million. Then taxpayers find out, well, the cost is somewhere between $300 and $400 million. Then the parliamentary budget officer produces this report that says the actual cost is, you know, up to $756 million, but even that doesn't consider the full cost of the scheme. Then we get internal government documents that show the gun ban and confiscation costs are more like $2 billion. But even that may be low-balling the costs. There's independent analysis showing that the gun ban and confiscation could cost taxpayers north of $6 billion. Now, anyone remember the long gun registry boondoggle? Remember the government initially said this would cost like $2 million? Not quite, right? The long gun registry boondoggle ended up costing taxpayers about $2 billion. So not only is the gun ban and confiscation scheme a huge taxpayer boondoggle, look, it's not gonna make Canada safe. And to talk more about that, I'm gonna be joined by the show in a second here by the president of the Toronto Police Association. So let's check out the interview that I had with Clayton Campbell. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest on the show today. We've got Clayton Campbell, who is the president of the Toronto Police Association. Mr. Campbell, thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time and having me.
Well, you know, with the government announcing its intentions to go forward with the gun ban and so-called buyback, I call it a confiscation scheme, but I thought it was very important to have you on the show, and I thought it was very important for our people to hear from you and your organization, you know, who represent the men and women in blue, whose task it is to keep us safe, right? So let's just start with the most important question. Do you think the gun ban and so-called buyback will actually make Canada more safe?
So, you know, I can speak to the city of Toronto. That's where I'm so proud to represent almost 8,700 members that are out there keeping the city of Toronto safe. And I can tell you the gun buyback program is going to have zero impact on gun crime in the city of Toronto. We deal with a lot of shootings, unfortunately. We seized about 700 illegal guns last year, almost 90% sourced from the U.S. And I can't think of one occasion where a legal gun has been used in a crime. They're all unlawful guns in the possession of thugs and gangsters that aren't allowed to have them in the first place, or are even prohibited to have them from a previous conviction. So I don't see any impact on gun crime in the city of Toronto with this gun ban.
Well, that's good for our people to know, right? Because this is what the ministers and a lot of these politicians in Ottawa are saying, that this is public safety. So it's great to hear your comments on that. And that's something that we've been echoing as well. And specifically, we come at this from the taxpayer point of view, right? Mm-hmm. We've heard estimates on the cost of this ranging from the hundreds of millions of dollars to the well into the billions of taxpayer dollars for this. So, you know, what would you think would be a better use of resources to actually help make Canada more safe?
Yeah, I can tell you every year, and we have to lobby the city of Toronto to make sure there's enough public funding to make sure safety for the citizens of Toronto. And I can tell you $750 million, that's a number I've heard. Even if a small fraction of that was sent to the city of Toronto, we could do so much with public safety. I'm sure if you spoke to our mayor, she would have ideas around public safety, our chief of police, where we could actually impact crime in this city. We could also impact preventing crime in this city, because that's just as important. We could hire, as an example, our budget for the Toronto Police is about $1.5 billion a year. This is half of the budget. You could hire 4,000 more police officers. And I'm certainly not saying police are the answer to everything, but if that, even a portion of that money was sent to the city of Toronto, we could have a huge impact on public safety in our great city.
Yeah, I mean, hiring more police officers rather than going after law-abiding Canadians certainly sounds to me like a better way to go about this. And, you know, to that point, let's just take a step back and let's stress a point here, right? Because I think after someone hears about this, the first thought in their head is like, well, look, criminals are not going to be handing over illegal guns to their police officers, right? This is really just targeting law-abiding Canadian citizens.
Yeah, and I mean, the reality of it is, I don't even know how it would work. I'm not aware of any plan in the city of Toronto. And, you know, I'm not in charge of the police service. That's the chief of police. But I'm not aware of any plan in place or how this would actually happen. And it's really just a waste of resources, you know. And I say to anybody listening to this, any of the politicians, send a little bit of that money to the city of Toronto and we can make a real difference in people's lives. We have some horrific incidents. We had an 8-year-old shot in bed, sleeping beside his mother a few weeks ago. It was so sad. And it was youths involved in that with illegal firearms not some lawful gun owner, certainly wasn't a hunter or a target shooter. So I think when resources and finances are tight, let's use those finances in a way that people get a good return on their investment. And this is not it. So again, I say send a small fraction of this to the city of Toronto and we can make a real difference in people's lives.
So when we talk about the gun crime like that, which is, it's so heartbreaking to hear, and we talk about the illegal gun problem, where are these guns coming from?
Yeah, great question. So last year we seized our great members that were out there every day, 700 illegal guns in the city of Toronto. About 90% are sourced from the US, so they're illegally smuggled across the border. And the other 10%, they may just not be able to be sourced, you know, if a serial number scratched off or something like that. But almost all of them, and again, I can't think of one right now that was a lawful gun or in the possession of a lawful gun owner. They're all illegal guns in the hands of thugs, criminals, gang members, causing the havoc we're seeing in the streets of Toronto. So again, another option would be take some of that $750 million, put it down to the border and try and stop some of these illegal guns from coming across and ending up in the streets of Toronto and ultimately in the deaths of our citizens.
You know, all taxpayers' money, it's scarce, right? There's only so many amount of dollars that can go around. And that's the same with police resources, right? Sure. There are scarce police resources. And that's why it's so important for the money to be spent effectively and efficiently. Can you just outline like how much of a hassle this would be for police resources to go after law-abiding Canadian citizens?
I wouldn't even know where to begin how it would be done, to be quite frank. So in the city of Toronto, we had many years of defunding the police where our numbers were plummeting to a point that we're unable even to provide basic policing services. We're very happy. We're starting to see those numbers go in the right direction, but still it takes a long time for people to get through to 911, for a police officer to respond, for investigators to do some of these complex investigations. As you can imagine, our gang and gun unit, these are not simple investigations. They can be costly. So I don't know how this would be done. You'd have to divert an immense amount of resources to doing this when we already can't keep up with what we're doing. It would again be a complete waste of resources. Let's keep those police officers and the rest of our brave members really tackling what's important, and that is those small number of violent criminals causing the violence we're seeing unfortunately every night in our streets, instead of wasting these resources on good, honest, hardworking people that own a firearm legally and are properly trained.
Yeah. And I just have to stress like the waste of resources, right? We've heard the minister say what, 740, 750 million, but like, that's not the full cost of the program. We've seen internal government documents suggesting this could be in the billions of dollars. And, Clayton, I got to just let you know something. I don't know a single thing about guns, right? Mm-hmm. I actually don't know a single thing about guns. That's not my expertise at all, but I do know a little thing about political communications and politicians hedging their words. And when I heard the government talk about the gun ban and confiscation, what word stuck out to me was style, right? They want to ban assault style firearms. Now, what do you make of that hedging of the language and, you know, just assault style firearms?
You know, it's confusing, and I'm not an expert in firearms either, but I've looked at the list. It seems like there's a wide variety from shotguns to 22 calibers to all sorts of different firearms. But, you know, our main point is really two points. Number one, these are not the guns involved in the violence you're seeing in the streets of Toronto. It is illegal, mostly handguns from the U.S., illegal handguns from the U.S. And number two, when budgets are so tight, I can tell you every year we have to really advocate hard to get proper funding for the police to waste $750 million on this program that is not going to impact the violence we're seeing in the streets of Toronto. It's a waste of money. Again, send us a small amount. We can actually make a difference. Send us a fraction of this and we can make a real difference and return on investment for the taxpayers. Going ahead with this is going to have no impact and just be a waste of resources.
I just got two more questions for you. I know you're a busy man and we'll let you go on your way and do your important work. But the first question I really want to ask again is, I've been hearing a lot of both the prime minister and ministers saying that it's not really a confiscation because it's voluntary, right? That's the words that they're using. What are your thoughts on this policy being sold as voluntary?
You know, I'll speak on behalf of our members. We're going to need clear direction because, you know, if it's a prohibited weapon, that's illegal. It would be no different than having any other prohibited weapon, like a machine gun or a grenade or all these other things that are prohibited. So I honestly don't know. And there's a lot of confusion around it. And, you know, we at times have been accused of being political with things. We are not. We are 100% about public safety. And in the city of Toronto, we work with an NDP mayor, a Liberal chair of our police services board, and a Conservative premier. We work with anybody. It's not about a political party. It's about real ideas. It's about evidence. And it's about making sure, as you're representing, taxpayers get a good bang for their buck when it comes to the money that they pay in taxes. And this is just not going to be effective. It's confusing. And I think there needs to be some clarity around what's going on here.
Yeah, well said. Well said. Hey, last question for you. On a personal note, why did you decide to become a police officer?
Yeah, it's a great question. My dad was a police officer for 39 years. He actually started in the city of Toronto and he retired as a staff sergeant in North Bay. I grew up in a small town called Powassan. And if anybody knows Powassan, there's about 1,000 people. So it might be rare that anybody knows it. So I followed in my dad's footsteps and also very proud. Both my brothers are police officers with the Durham Regional Police Service. And my wife is a detective with the Toronto Police Service. So it's in our blood, four kids. And I hope to see one of them at least follow in my footsteps and be a police officer as well.
Oh, right on. Well, hey, Mr. Campbell, I just want to say thank you for coming on the show today. And more importantly, thanks for your service.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks again for having me.
All right, we've got Chris Sims on the show to break down all the big taxpayer news that you don't want to miss. Simmer, you ready for clips with Chris?
You betcha.
All right, Chris, you know how it works. I'm just going to read you a couple big headlines from the week, and I'm just going to get you to rant on them, okay?
Sure.
First headline comes from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, our very own Carson Binda, our BC director. The headline goes by this, okay? BC minister must explain $6,600 limousine bill.
Yeah, this is a big one, and great on Carson for digging up these receipts and these expenses. So here's what happened. As of right now, the finance minister of British Columbia is a lady known as Brenda Bailey. Back in 2023, she took a trip, a junket, as it were, out to Boston, Massachusetts, which is in the United States. If you actually look on a globe, it's on the opposite side. Okay,
yeah, not close.
North America. It's ocean to ocean forever. And this was her going to this trip. So it was her and a handful of staffers, and they went there for like 4 days or so. But here's the thing. They rented a vehicle for $6,600 from a limousine company. And not just any limousine company. This was a super fancy limousine company. Like, apparently they're even quoting like, 007 doesn't drive himself around. Why should you? Because you're an MLA from British Columbia and you're in Boston for some random reason and you're not 007. Also, you're on taxpayer dime. So this is why we're really sounding the alarm over this, because $6,600 for like physical ground transportation over four-ish days in another city, that's an obscene amount of money.
Yeah, it's nuts. Let me just read you straight from this article. I mean, again, kudos to Carson. Great digging. Okay, so Minister Brenda Bailey charged taxpayers for a $6,645 limousine service bill during a four-day trip to Boston in 2023. Yep, not Vancouver, not Victoria, not British Columbia. Bailey used the taxpayer-funded limousine service for trips to the New England Aquarium. Chris, isn't there an aquarium out there in British Columbia?
The Vancouver Aquarium is world famous, Franco.
Yeah. Okay, so for trips to the New England Aquarium, high-end steak and seafood restaurants, a shopping mall, as well as a conference centers and hotels. Chris, no seafood restaurants out there in Vancouver?
So the legislature is actually in Victoria, and Fort Victoria is on the southern tip of Vancouver Island. Vancouver Island is in the ocean. So yeah, lots of seafood there. This is bizarre. I can't believe she flew there. And I can't believe that she rented this limousine service.
Yeah, and let me just read a little bit more from the article here, because Carson actually did a lot of digging into the limousine service company itself. And as Carson notes, the company markets itself as a luxury service for, quote, pop culture icons who never drive. A quote from the company's website: sure, 007 can drive, but when he's not dodging explosions, he's being chauffeured in absolute luxury. Kind of crazy.
If you're an MLA from British Columbia, you're also James Bond. Like, the level of entitlement here is mind-blowing. And people aren't new to this, okay? We've seen entitlement scandals before in politics. This should be staffing 101 or managing a minister on MLA 101. If you're going on a trip, one, don't call it a junket, which is what she actually called it. Two, you rent the least expensive vehicle you can find, and or you take Ubers, and you eat modestly when you're overseas or in another place on the taxpayer dime. But what blew my mind here, Franco, is that she went and blew all this money, $6,600, on a limousine service, and she's trying to justify it. Like, she's coming after Carson. She's coming after the Taxpayers Federation, and she just opened a whole can of worms.
Yeah.
She should not have done that.
Yeah, you she's mad at us? Say, we're mad at you. How about that?
You can't handle the truth. Like, this is a problem, because she's actually trying to say, actually, it was a super luxurious SUV that we had chauffeured for us and not an actual limousine from the limousine company. That does not make this better. Stop digging. But no, she had that shovel in her hands, Franco, and she just kept going for it. Then she said, yeah, I went on a junket, which is literally like a frivolous waste of money trip. Like, you shouldn't call it that. And three, she said, oh, well, does the Taxpayers Federation expect me to eat at Wendy's?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. You can get really good salads at Wendy's, for real. Like, their beef is fresh, never frozen. It's like, seriously, go eat. Like, This is gross. And so, just quick comms tip. If you find that you're in hot water like this, don't double down. Just come out and say, you know what? I'm going to do better. I'm so sorry. Cover the cost yourself if you can. Say, I've learned from this. I'm really sorry. Don't shoot the messenger. Don't say, do you want me to work? Actually, yeah, we do want you to work at Wendy's. You're doing a terrible job as finance minister. But do you want me to eat at Wendy's? And also, don't try to defend it saying it was only a super luxurious SUV that we chauffeured from the limo company. All of that is bad.
Hey, Chris, I do want to move on to a couple other stories here, but I know we're kind of, you know, poking fun at this, but I actually think there's a bigger, more substantial issue here, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, if you can't do the little things right, you're probably not going to do the big things right.
Yeah. So very quickly on that, you're exactly right, Franco. Because Minister Bailey is now the finance minister. So she goes and pulls this stunt in Boston, blows $6,600 on a super fancy vehicle, okay, showing that she's wasting taxpayers' money. Carry that over to the macro level. They are going to be $155 billion in debt with a B, like, this year. It's horrendous in British Columbia right now. The NDP government, since it took power, is doubling the debt, doubling it. Like, their spending is out of control. The size of their bureaucracy is out of control. They're adding FTEs like it's going out of style. Like, they have got some serious discipline problems there. And frankly, it shows. It shows when they pull things like this.
Speaking of discipline problems, let's segue up to Ottawa with the next taxpayer headline. Okay, so we're going to be brief on this one. We'll have some major deep dives into this coming up, but I just want to touch on it. Comes again from the ctftaxpayer.com. The headline is PBO projects soaring deficit and debt interest charges.
Yeah, you were waiting on this one for a while, and I actually tried calling you this morning, and I'm sorry because you were in the middle of trying to cover this report. And so what I took away from this is it's just as bad as we were fearing. And it might even be worse. And so we're still paying, what, more than $1 billion a week in debt interest payments? They're still piling on. What blows my mind, Franco, and I still can't wrap my head around this, is that Prime Minister Mark Carney, a guy with a PhD in economics, okay, former central banker of two major nations, he is adding more onto the debt, if I'm saying this right, than Justin Trudeau was planning to.
Yeah.
Right?
That's like, right. I mean, like, here are the numbers, right? The numbers are, so over the next 4 years, again, according to this PBO report just released, Carney looks like he's going to add about $255 billion to the debt over the next 4 years. So to put that in comparison, right, Trudeau was planning to add about $131 billion to the debt over those same 4 years. So let that sink in. Essentially, Carney is planning on adding more than $100 billion more to the debt than what even Trudeau was planning to do over the next 4 years. So look, my takeaway reading this, I actually kind of feel worried. I'm like very worried about the state of our country and our finances. And look, like Carney said, he pretty much sold Canadians on this idea that he was going to be different than Trudeau. Well, at least on the debt, the truth is that he is different than Trudeau. He's planning to borrow billions of dollars more than Trudeau.
So it's worse. It's a worse different, not a better different. I just talked to Alex Pearson about this today. I'm critically worried about this because they're not showing that they get it, Franco. And my fear here is that they're kicking the can ahead on the budget by a month because we're expecting it now in November, correct?
November. Yeah, November 4.
Here we are this deep into the fiscal year and we're going to get a federal budget in November. One, that's not acceptable. Two, I'm fearing that they're kicking the can on this because they're trying to cook it. They're trying to make it look like, oh, there's a difference between investment and spending, or there's a difference between, you know, operating budget and capital budget. They're trying to split it in order to hide their spending. But like, you're the one that knows this stuff. Do international markets and credit rating agencies, like, do they care what bucket label they have their spending in? Or is this all spending? Is this all debt?
It is all just more debt, right? Like, so unless they're going to cut spending somewhere else, but what the PBO shows, here's what the PBO shows. It shows that Carney's actually going to increase spending by billions of dollars every single year. And, you know, after just the absolute out of control runaway spending from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, like over the last decade, if you're going to spend more than Trudeau, like that's a failing grade. You get a big fat F, right? The banker was supposed to be better than the drama teacher with the numbers, and yet the banker's planning on borrowing even more. Chris, I want to get your take on one more headline, okay? There'll be time to dive into the budget numbers in a sec, but this one comes from CTV, okay? And it's Polyev says that there should be billions of dollars in cuts to federal bureaucracy.
Yeah, it has to happen. This is something that, frankly, you've done a great job on. And every time you give me another number, it honestly shocks me. And so if we had simply, and this is your math, man, if we had simply kept the growth of our bureaucracy in line with our population growth as a nation, we would be saving around $7 billion a year. A year, folks. And we're not talking, imagine starting in 2015. Don't reduce it, grow it, but only at the rate of population. $7 billion a year we would be saving. That's seven hospitals. And so this is why I lived in Ottawa for 15 years. My daughter was born there. I know it inside and out. I know that there's language of like, oh, attrition or letting people retire and not replace them, blah, 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 blah. That is not going to cut it here, folks. They've added like 99,000 human beings to the rank and file of the bureaucracy. They have to cut it like by thousands and thousands and thousands of positions, because I think we're hitting a critical mark here, Franco. Because I'm old enough to remember when then Finance Minister Paul Martin basically said, time's up. We can't get any more money. We're facing a fiscal crisis. We're making huge cuts. And what happened then is we saw rural hospitals across the prairies getting shut down. A lot of pain was inflicted.
That was the NDP in Saskatchewan, right? Like, that's the number one thing, right? Like, ask the NDP in Saskatchewan, what's the one thing that will lead to hospitals closing down? And it's the interest charges on the debt. And federal debt interest charges are costing us more than $1 billion a week. Chris, you know, I really just told you I want to talk about these three headlines, but, you know, it's not really a headline, so to speak, but the entire show we've been talking about the gun ban and confiscation scheme. So, you know, I know you're busy. I want to get you out of here, but I just got to get your take. You know, what's your take on everything going on around the gun ban and confiscation scheme?
Real quick, three things. One, it is a huge deal for the Toronto Police Association to come out publicly and say this will not solve the crime problem on our streets and it's going to cost way too much money. Just a little bit of insight here, okay? Because I was a court reporter for a long time, okay? I know law enforcement. They don't want to get involved. They hate getting involved politically and having to speak up. Even when day in and day out, they're arresting the same like five bad guys in town and they're getting frustrated. Okay. For them to have the courage to come out publicly and say, you know what, folks, this is not going to work and it's not going to solve crime. That is huge. So kudos to them for speaking up. Number two, super important. The OPP is saying, yeah, they're really echoing what the Toronto Police Association is saying. OPP saying, man, this ain't going to work. So when we have, and we have the premiers of both Alberta and Saskatchewan saying, yeah, we're not doing this. So if you get really influential premiers like Danielle Smith and Scott Moe, you get a huge cop union like the Toronto Police Association, a huge police force like the OPP, all saying the same thing, and the safety minister accidentally getting caught on tape basically saying the same thing.
Oopsies.
I can't believe I even heard that. Two things. A, won't help safety. B, will cost way too much money. Right now is critical because they're doing a pilot program in Cape Breton Island. So two things there. One, if you're one of these firearms owners and you're licensed to have a gun, like you're a legal gun owner, don't freak out. You have another year of amnesty. Don't hand your firearm over yet. Two, we can help you. The Taxpayers Federation, we're going to be helping you with some legal advice here. So hang fire.
Hey, thanks, Chris. This was fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Great show, Franco.
Hey, folks, that was Clips with Chris. I love that segment. I really love it. And folks, I just want to say, hey, thank you for watching along. I'm having a lot of fun with this new format. And I read some of the comments from the last show, and it seems like you folks are you're enjoying the show as well. So let's keep this whole interactive you say, I say thing going on here. You know, let me know in the comments what other topics you'd like us to discuss. Any evergreen topics, any new topics of the day you'd like us to dive into. Let us know. Type a little comment in there and I'll make sure to read it. But there's another thing I got to ask you folks about. And please let me know your answer in the comments. I'm really struggling with something, folks. I'm really struggling with something. I just can't figure out which is a dumber thing the government is doing. And it's eating on me, right? Like, is it more dumb to ban the sale of new gas and diesel vehicles by 2035? Or is it more dumb to try to improve safety by going after law-abiding Canadian citizens? They're both just so dumb. I just can't wrap my head around it. Folks, what do you think? Let me know in the comments below. What's more dumb? Banning the sale of new gas and diesel vehicles by 2035? Or trying to improve safety by not going after criminals? No. Going after law-abiding Canadian citizens. Folks, let me know. And that's it for the Franco Terrazano Show this time. Yeah, of course, I'm Franco Terrazano. I'm so appreciative of you guys watching along and letting me know what you think in the comments. Until next time, I'm going to keep fighting entitled politicians and bureaucrats. I hope you keep fighting with us.